For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire.
Not getting no down.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on fire. You know, the deep state never gives up trying to destroy our rights. They view the Constitution not as a protector of our liberties and a protector of our way of life and a protector of our culture and a protection of us against the government. The left, the deep state, views the Constitution merely as an impediment to their ultimate goal of a single world socialist government with absolute control over everybody. And whenever our last bulwark against totalitarianism, the Supreme Court of the United States, rules against the deep state always tries to find a way around it. For example, think about the student loans. Think about Biden's student loan giveaway. Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. You don't have any constitutional right to do that. Well, guess what? Biden says, I'm going to do it anyway. When he comes out with the eviction moratorium and the Supreme Court says, nah, you can't do that. Biden gets on television and says, I know what I'm doing is unconstitutional. I know it's illegal. I'm going to do it anyway because by the time the Supreme Court gets around to slapping my fanny, it'll already be done. Well, once again, the Supreme Court ruled recently on the constitutionality of restrictions in New York State on concealed carry, and the Bruin decision revamped the criteria for deciding whether or not restrictions on our Second Amendment rights are constitutional, and put out a pretty broad warning to the states in this country that unless there's some historical precedent for what you're going to do in the way of restricting people's Second Amendment rights, you can't do it. Well, guess what? The state of Illinois doesn't give a poop about the Constitution, doesn't give a poop about individual liberties, doesn't give a poop about the Second Amendment, doesn't understand what the words shall not be infringed mean. And so they've imposed a new law that went into effect this January, outlawing what they call assault weapons, outlawing essentially all semi-automatic center-fire weapons, and outlawing what they call large-capacity magazines. And I will digress. Do you remember when a guy named David Chipman was being proposed as the head of ATF? One of the senators decided to ask him, since he was always advocating against assault weapons and always advocating for the control and elimination of assault weapons in the hands, weapons of war in the hands of civilians, how he could define an assault weapon. And he was unable to do so. Well, a couple of days later, I was on a national television broadcast, and I was giving him poop over that. And the announcer says to me, well, Mr. McCloskey, you're so damn smart. Can you define an assault weapon? I said, sure, it's easy. It's an effective defense against an overreaching government. And that's what the Second Amendment is all about. It's not about shooting Bambi and Kevlar like Joe Biden says. It's about keeping the central government from having monopoly on coercive force, giving the population an ability to defend itself against oppression. Well, the state of Illinois doesn't like that. The state of Illinois would like to oppress everybody, and so they've imposed their new restrictions. Well, there's a gentleman up in Naperville, Illinois, who opposed that, thinks that we ought to have a right to defend ourselves, thinks we ought to have a right to exercise our God-given right of self-defense as stated in the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. And that gentleman is Mr. Robert Bevis, and we're honored to have him on the show today as a guest. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Welcome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mark. Happy to be here.
Oh, well, thanks for being on. Tell us a little bit about the new restrictions in Illinois.
Oh, well, you know, they're restricting those scary black guns and all that, you know, what they call assault weapons, which includes your Ruger 10/22 if it happens to have a threaded barrel on it. But, yeah, it's getting pretty bad over here in the Republic of Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you this. How many people in the last, 10 years or so do you think died as a result of having a threaded barrel on their rifle?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's sort of funny because they say threaded barrel, But you know that 90% of rifles have the barrels are threaded into the receiver. They didn't make the determination of a threaded barrel on the muzzle end.
Yeah, with but, which end? Well, yeah. They don't know which end is up.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
They don't know which end is up.
No, absolutely don't. Yeah. Well, yeah. But and, you know, to answer your question, out here in Illinois, it's pretty rough. You know, we've been fighting this unconstitutional law that I don't even know what to call him. I guess he's a governor, but he's got to have a better name than that. But he's probably the governor that hates his citizens the most, I think, in the entire United States. You know, I thought California was pretty bad, but no, J.B. Pritzker has them beat. Hands down. He's got this law going on, and we're battling it, and we are going to fight until it's in the dust pile and help protect everybody's rights out there. And hopefully this is a case that's going to resonate across the U.S., and we're going to shut down gun control forever.
Well, tell us a little bit about what the new statute entails. I understand that if you have something, it gets grandfathered in as a, quote, assault weapon or a weapon of war, you have to register it now with the state government?
Yes, there's a registry in place. Basically, they said, we're not taking away anybody's guns. All you have to do is register them, and you can keep them. But we're going to prevent anybody, law-abiding citizens, from purchasing them anymore or having them repaired buying parts to fix their own guns or adding any accessories to them or anything like that, even if it's registered. Yeah. You're unable to do that. So, they're not taking them away. They're just preventing law-abiding people from having them and doing nothing to stop crime, which is what the backbone that they're, using for this. But, it's pretty rough. There's over 100 and I think it's almost 190 guns that are specifically listed. But then they go into every facsimile, duplicate, variant, copy, or anything that even resembles. And then they go into specific features of guns, like a threaded barrel or a handguard that surrounds the barrel to prevent you from burning your hand, or an adjustable stock. You know, if it's an adjustable stock, maybe you got some short arms and you need to adjust it to shoot more effectively. There's so many crazy things in this law.
Does it preclude flash suppressors on the barrel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's one of my favorite ones. How many people in this country, in the history of the country, in the civilian population, have ever been killed as a result of your rifle having a flash suppressor on the end of the barrel?
Right, yeah. It makes no sense. The governor here even said, hey, we're banning grenade launchers and Glock switches. Yeah, they've been banned for years. It's illegal. He's taking credit for banning them here in Illinois.
How about thermonuclear devices? Are they part of the gun ban?
Yeah, I guess they didn't actually put it in there. You know, they misappropriate that. An AR-15, is a military weapon. And they say, oh, it's a military weapon. You can't have that. But you can have an M1 Garand. Yeah. And you can have an M1 carbine and a 1911, all weapons that have been used by the military for a long time.
Yeah.
Your 320s now are military weapons. But no, they can't get their facts straight. And, it's a shame, because, we decided to fight this fight as a small gun shop and family owned business. And we really thought that, well, I was a little ignorant, but I just thought, I'm going to go into this council meeting in Naperville and I'm going to tell them the facts, how it's not going to save lives. It's not going to stop a criminal from getting a firearm. It isn't going to make criminals turn their firearms in. It's not going to make them register them or stop any of these horrific crimes. And I really thought they were going to say, you know what, Rob, you're right. We got it all wrong. But no, that's when I learned about political theater.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you told the fine folks in the council in Naperville that more people get killed by hands and fists and hammers every year than by long rifles, long guns of all kinds. And I'm sure they were fierce impressed by that, too.
Oh, yeah. They were like, oh, really? Oh, sure. No, they don't care a damn thing about what I said. Honestly, yeah, I told them real facts. I basically gave him this scenario. I said, you taking firearms away from law-abiding citizens that you're supposed to be preventing crime. I said, you know, it's like saying, let's, the best way to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers is just don't let sober drivers drive.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly their whole issue here. And, they said, oh, you know, if we stop people from buying them, they're not going to use them in crimes. So they're, well, look, there's been, what, 13 uses in what they call mass shootings, of course. You know, that doesn't matter if you've been killed or not. It's just somebody was injured or there were shots fired and somebody was injured or maybe slipped and fell. It would be considered, you know, more than four people, that's a mass shooting. Well, there's been, what, 13, I think, with an AR-15. And, you know, that's a pretty popular rifle. I wonder how many people of those 13 actually had iPhones, the most popular phone out there, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, what happened to the other 44 million of these rifles that are in the country that haven't committed a crime and haven't been involved in anything? You know, and how do they use these numbers and justify, you know, getting people to back this? I was astounded that people have such a herd mentality and not critical thinkers, but it's happening.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you know, it, on the topic of mass shootings, I've lived and my wife and I've lived in the city of St. Louis, oh gosh, since 1988. And if you're counting on mass shootings being four or more people injured in shootings in any given day, that happens every single day in St. Louis. And then think about Chicago. Our daughter lives in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, here's one of the most restrictive gun environments in the country. Is it safe? Are you now free from crime in Chicago since you don't allow law-abiding citizens to carry guns?
That's right. There's mass shootings every weekend in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, but nobody talks about that. And they don't talk about mental health. They don't talk about the medication that these people are on. You know, the real problem with some of these. Yeah. Hey, look, it's a heinous crime, right? Nobody wants this to happen. And we'd love to be able to stop it. But for God's sakes, don't disarm us so that we become victims.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's really their goal. 100% of the time when there's been a registry that's been enacted, the gun confiscation comes next.
Yeah.
Now, Illinois, we have some very good information that Governor Pritzker here has pre-written an emergency order that he plans to enact or execute the next time there is a what he calls mass shooting, whether it happens in Illinois or not. It's going to be a complete prohibition on the so-called assault weapons, you know, which is just our favorite rifles and handguns out there. And he is going to make a complete prohibition, give you 60 to 90 days to turn them in. And if you don't, you get a heightened criminal level there or crime. And he's going to go after the people that have registered. But funny thing is, there's about, I think it's 2% of the people actually registered. So he's pretty, for lack of a better word, butthurt that he hasn't got a larger registry going there. So, and his reasoning is, if we're not responsible enough to register our guns, we're not responsible enough to have them.
Well, of course, you know, just like the new regulations on pistol braces, which are, you know, I guess still up in the air, the purpose is to make as many felons as there are in the world, because
right.
Who's most likely to be a, quote, felon, unquote, for having a pistol brace or, quote, a unregistered semi-automatic rifle, unquote, than a good MAGA Trump supporting Republican.
Yeah, there you go.
And the more Republicans you can turn into non-voting eligible felons, and maybe in as many as 40 million for pistol braces, how do you think that might affect an election?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about the border and letting everybody in, but you're absolutely right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. All these things, you know, There is so little logic involved in it, and of course the only logic is all these things are designed to disarm honest citizens, and
absolutely.
And you know, then when you think about what's going to happen this summer and this spring, I always say rioting is a summertime sport, right? But the government has the ability to turn the powers that be, I shouldn't call it a government anymore, the deep state that controls everything has the ability to turn on and off things like BLM and Antifa. I fully anticipate that they will turn them on this year to try to affect the election and then wait for some evil white supremacist, right-wing extremist Republicans
to defend his home
to defend
from being
themselves.
Attacked. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know anything about that myself, but I suspect.
Yeah, I know. I'll send you a link. You might want to read some. I just want to touch a little bit on where we are in the case here. Yeah. So we filed a lawsuit against the city of Naperville because they enacted this ordinance and. I went to my family and I said, look, before we file this case, I said, look, you want to just pick up and move, or should we stand and fight? And they all unanimously said, hey, let's stand and fight for everybody's rights. Because we have, we had a 10,000 customer base almost, maybe 9,000. And we said, most of them don't understand that if it starts in Naperville, it's going to get worse. And, it's the tip of the spear. So let's fight and see if we can knock this thing down. And so we went ahead and filed the lawsuit, and and then in a matter of 6 months, we went down to, we lost 80% of our business from the media and Naperville saying, oh, we're going to put him out of business and close his doors. It scared people off. They started saying, hey, we better find a new gun shop, and they wanted all their back orders to be, they wanted to cancel back orders, and we're writing $30,000 checks back to people. To cover back orders that they've had that we haven't been able to get yet. And they were canceling everything. So, when it starts getting to about, $300,000-$400,000 in legal fees, I was shocked that it went that quickly. And of course we enjoined the state of Illinois in the lawsuit. And, I'll tell you right now, we're down almost $500,000 and over $3 million in sales and, let go of 9 employees just to, just to keep the doors open and try to keep in the fight. Because look, if I close my store, because I can't make it, they will immediately file for a motion to dismiss. And these Chicago federal judges would give it to them in a second.
Oh, absolutely.
And we put this back 2 years.
Yeah.
So we're fighting our best to stay here. Now, we have been in front of the Seventh Circuit Appellate Court, and they denied us. So our next step is a writ of certiorari, which is going to the U.S. Supreme Court in a couple weeks. And we're hoping to get at least oral arguments done in October. And prior to that, if they do take it, we're going to ask for another injunction immediately and try to stop this across the country.
All right. Well, we have to take a hard break here. Can you hang around until the next segment?
Absolutely. Be right here.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Robert Beavis after this message.
Fighting against totalitarianism. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Robert Beavis, who, at great expense to himself, his business, his family, is standing up against the deep state, trying to overturn Illinois and Naperville's unconstitutional gun ban. The Seventh Circuit is about as liberal as any circuit court, any court of appeals in the federal system. I'm not surprised they dumped you on this, but tell us what the status is in the Supreme Court and what you've done to get there.
So, the Judge Easterbrook there in the Seventh Circuit, he really wishes he was a Supreme Court judge, and he was stepped over. So he has a pretty bad look or outlook for the Supreme Court. So he just defies them, slaps them in the face. And that's basically what happened. One of the things that they said in the Seventh Circuit opinion is they said an AR-15 is not a gun.
Really?
Which was yucking. Oh, yeah. You have to read the opinion. You just won't believe it. Yeah, they said the Supreme Court got it wrong in Bruin and that they can ban these firearms, but the biggest one is that an AR-15 is not a gun for purposes of the Second Amendment. And
really, what is it?
We don't know. They just, it's just a random, paragraph in the opinion that makes no sense.
Oh,
now, how can it not be? And you know what else? It's not in common use because it hasn't used daily, and they have no statistics on it actually killing people and defending yourselves by killing people with it. So if you don't use it and actually kill somebody, you're not using it, and it's not in common use.
So here's the logic of the left, right? Because this is the most popular, quote, weapon of war, owned by American citizens, and it's most widely sold in it and all its variants, but it's not commonly used, and therefore it's not subject to constitutional protection. Don't you love it?
Yeah.
Don't you love it? So it gives, obviously you're getting eaten alive by attorney's fees. Tell us once again how we can help you out.
Well, next step, like I said, was we're going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court again. We're filing our motion for cert here. Our request for cert goes out in 2 weeks. The National Association for Gun Rights has stepped in and is helping me quite a bit now in keeping the legal battle going. So I'm very thankful for them, and I think everybody should join. You know, the NRA hasn't done anything in years. Go to the National Gun Rights Foundation and sign up there for $30 or whatever it is and be part of their organization. They're great. Right now, we're hoping that that we can get some help from people out there, obviously, on the donation side. But we've also developed a new product that basically takes your AR-15 rifle and removes it from the classification as an assault weapon.
And how's that?
Yeah. In the law, it specifically says that they wrote it, not me. This is not my words. This is the law. The law says that any firearm that is operated by a bolt, pump, lever, or slide action is not an assault weapon. So what we did is I have a full machine shop here, and we're gunsmiths, and we do manufacturing and training and stuff. And so I sat there and I looked at the AR-15, and I said, how can we convert this to a bolt-action rifle? And what we did is we were able to take the actual bolt itself out of the bolt carrier group and modify it in our CNC machines to designed it in a way where the gas system on your AR-15 actually bypasses the bolt carrier and still ejects out your ejection port, but doesn't cycle the firearm, which means when you fire this gun, you fire it, then you'll charge the handle back and fire the next shot and charge the handle and fire. So it turns it into a bolt action, a manually operated bolt action rifle, which removes it from the classification as an assault weapon, and all the attachments on that bolt action firearm don't have to be registered either. Because in Illinois, if you have a trigger or a hammer or a stock or a grip or a flash suppressor, you have to register all those parts as assault weapon attachments, which I don't even know what that means either, because heck, I could attach a toilet bowl to the side of my rifle. Would that make it an assault weapon attachment? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's their thinking. So we've got this great product called the Law Bolt 15, and we're manufacturing them here right in our store and selling them to people. And I've probably got as many people that have bought the bolt as has registered their firearms, with the state of Illinois. I'm keeping up with Pritzker's numbers here.
Yeah. Well, so for those of us that have some familiarity with the AR-15, what you're saying is that between every shot, you've got to pull the charging handle back and let it drop?
Correct. Yep, right. That's right. So that makes it manually operated bolt action, because the bolt is in your bolt carrier group, and you're manually operating it, and it will not fire or cycle semi-automatic. And if you look at the assault weapon definitions, the very first words are semi-automatic rifle, semi-automatic pistol, semi-automatic shotgun. So
let me ask you this.
Remove the semi-automatic part.
If you pull the bolt carrier out and drop in the old bolt carrier, does it go back to being a semi?
Actually, just the bolt, and it sure does.
Oh, okay. That's cool. How many of those do you think you've sold so far?
Probably 4,000 or so.
Oh, wow.
3,000 or 4,000 of them. Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's
quite a bit. Now, the best part about this, Mark, is that if you look at the law, any of you people that are living in a state where you don't have anything left of your Second Amendment rights, and they have one of these bans in place, California, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, there's a bunch of them. Look at the law and see what the definition is of what is not an assault weapon. It's almost I'm sure it's a copy and paste across these states.
Oh, yeah.
So the bolt will work in your state as well.
You know, the problem, of course, is that the left doesn't care about the law. And the left doesn't care about the wording of a statute. If they want to arrest you for it, if you have bolt-operated AR-15, which can be converted into a semi-automatic operated AR-15. My guess is they will seize your gun, accuse you of having essentially the precursor for a semi-automatic rifle, and arrest you anyway.
Well, so yeah, we've had that actually brought up with our lawyers as well. So one of the big things is what they call readily convertible, right? So, but here's the thing. If you don't have another bolt in your possession to swap it out, it's not readily convertible.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, you can't just take a screwdriver and turn a screw and all of a sudden it's shooting again. Okay. It's not readily convertible unless you have the parts, and the bolt that we're selling you is not able to be turned back into a semi-automatic bolt. So if you take out your original bolt and put in ours, you have to get rid of your original one, whether it's shipping it out of state to a friend or, you know, turning it in or cutting it up into a million pieces. If you don't have the parts, then it's not readily convertible, and they say 100% legal. Now, who's to say whether ATF or not ATF, but one of your law enforcement guys changes the bolt out for you? I don't know, but you never know.
You would never suspect that law enforcement might modify a weapon after they've seized it, would you?
No, it's never been heard of before. Yeah,
in turning our attention to the pistol brace issue, right? The head of ATF was testifying in front of Congress and said, you know, you don't have to get rid of your pistol brace. You just take it off your rifle and put it in a different place, and we won't consider that a violation. What, 2 days later, ATF came out with a bulletin saying the exact opposite.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Hey, just look, when they keep moving the goalie, you know, the goal, we don't know what to do, right? But, you know, as soon as they attack our constitutional rights, you know, I think that everybody has to stand up. You know, I commend you for everything you've done, Mark. You know, but let me tell you, prior to this, I was probably one of those people that didn't do enough. You know, I didn't go to the NRA conventions and didn't get involved in the big, you know, uproars, and sort of stayed in my own lane, did my own thing. You know, yes, I voted, but I didn't really, you know, push any issues or really think about it that much until it was knocking on my doorstep, you know. And now all I can say is that I wish I had gotten involved a lot earlier. We were able to have 1,800 people. I had 1,800 people vote that had never voted before in their lives in 2022. They actually went out and voted, you know, for the new mayor here in Naperville. And he won, but he still has no power to stop this. But 1,800 people voting, and, you know, that was a miracle. So I guess what I want to tell everybody is, hey, just do something, you know. Get off the couch, go and talk to your neighbor, your family, you know, tell them a little bit about your views, get into a conversation, explain some of this stuff. You know, it goes such a long way. And get out and vote these bad guys out. Look at your country. See, look what's happening to it. You know, be a critical thinker. Don't just follow along and say, hey, you know, give me popcorn because he bought popcorn. You know, maybe you want, you know, a taco or something different. Think about what's going on, and it'll make a big difference in this, because we outnumber them quite a bit. It's just a matter, you know, Republicans, right-wing people, they're out working class. You know, we're working class people, and we don't have the time, we're too busy, we're too tired, or they'll say my vote isn't going to count anyway, it won't make a difference. It does make a difference. Every single vote makes a difference.
Absolutely.
And that's really got to spread.
And, you know, the problem is that everybody's out there just trying to make a living and get along, and they think that the government's out there, that the Republicans you elect to represent you, your congressman, your senator, you know, in some states like Missouri, we actually have Republican congressmen and senators, unlike Illinois.
Unlike Illinois. Yeah.
But you think they're going to be out there, they're going to save your rear end for you, and you don't have to participate. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, they're not out there to protect you. They're out there to protect themselves, to get reelected, to line their pockets with the money from their lobbyists, to get free vacations, and in the case of some
wine and dine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because if they don't have that... I'm sorry, if they don't have that seat in their, whatever, desk they're sitting at, they're just average Joe mowing their lawn like you and me.
Yeah.
You know, they it's a crack to them. They have to be able to be important and be asked all these, people saying, oh, Mr. Council Member, can you do this? Can you do that? And wined and dined and the money they're getting in the back end and all of that. And so, no, they're not looking out for you. You've got to get it. They always say, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
Exactly.
You have to protect yourself.
Absolutely.
Like you did, sir.
Well, and
you did it. And that's the only reason that you weren't overtaken is because you took a stance. And that's what everybody needs to do.
As I was going to say exactly those words. If we're going to save this country, if we're going to save this great republic, we're going to save our individual liberties and freedoms, each and every one of us has to take a personal stand for our security, our Constitution, and our liberty. And we can't put up with unconstitutional mandates. We have to stand up against it. And, I was taking a strong position in front of the Republican Central Committee for the city of St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, and everybody's saying about a program we have here to vet Republicans to make sure they're actually Republicans. They're saying, well, we're going to get sued. And I said, well, if the fear of getting sued is what motivates you, if you're willing to sacrifice your freedom for the fear of having to defend it in court, then you don't deserve your freedom.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. Yeah, if you can't take a little bit of heat, from somebody threatening to sue you when you're talking about leaving this world to your kids and your grandkids and hopefully in a better way than we are today, that's my hope and goal, then, yeah, you shouldn't be. Just move to North Korea or something. Get out of here.
Absolutely. You don't have to move to North Korea. North Korea is coming to a neighborhood near you.
Move to Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I like traveling through. We go to Indiana from time to time. I like the process. When I get ready to cross the bridge over to Illinois, I got to take my pistol out, unload it, lock the pistol in my glove compartment, lock my magazine in the back of the truck, and then hope that nobody stops me on the way between there and the Indiana border.
And then when you get to Indiana, you got to reverse it and go back to it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And where am I most likely to have a problem? Is it in Indiana or is it in Illinois, right? Yeah. And how useful is my pistol when the bullets are locked in the trunk, right?
Exactly. And I don't know what to say, honestly, except that it has to be the most corrupt state there is. And if you value your Second Amendment, don't move here.
Yeah.
Do not move to Illinois. In fact, get the heck out of here if you possibly can. Unfortunately, I've spent all my money and now I'm stuck here for a while. But I'm sure eventually we'll get back on our feet here. But hopefully, by the way, I want to tell everybody out there, if anybody wants to know anything if there's anything I can answer about what's left of our Second Amendment rights, feel free to call me at Law Weapons, give us a call here at the shop. I'm happy to answer questions. If you're in the area, come by, let's have some coffee. I take the time to talk. We're trying to educate people as much as possible. So don't hesitate to get a hold of us if you can.
Well, give us your website, your donation site, and your telephone number so we can do that.
Absolutely. Sure. Okay. So the website is lawweapons.org. That's lawweapons.org, where you can get our number there, which is 630-317-7155. And we also have a donation page through GiveSendGo. So it's givesendgo.com/lawweapons. And you can also find a link of that on our website as well. But feel free to give me a call. Robert Beavis here. I'm the owner of Law Weapons. Talk to my daughter Jocelyn or my son Chris and my wife Ileana and anybody who's happy to answer your questions and help everybody out that we possibly can. And if you need a Law Bolt 15, let me know. We'll mail one out immediately to you. And please, help us if you can. If you can afford to donate a little bit, anything helps to try to keep our fight going so that we can see this through. Our war chest is pretty dry. So, we could sure use a refill and let's teach these anti-gunners a lesson in this case.
Well, you know,
let's make sure we abolish it forever.
You just click every box for why the left would hate you. Here you are. You're a small business owner. Your family works in the business with you, and you sell guns for the people to defend themselves and defend themselves against the government. You know, holy, you know what? Who could be worse for this country than a God-fearing family man with a small business?
Yeah, they don't like me. That's for sure. You know. Yeah. If I wind up in a trunk, you know why.
Tell the entire world right now, I'm not depressed. I'm not going to commit suicide.
Absolutely not. No, I love life, and I love everybody's life out there. So, you know, and I think it's valuable enough to protect it. So,
all right,
give us a call.
All right. Well, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
That's right.
Well, Robert Beavis, thank you for being on the program. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll pay attention to your fight in the Supreme Court, and we wish you the best of luck. And ladies and gentlemen, everybody out there, we all have to do like Mr. Beavis. We need to stand up against this government. We need to stand up for our rights, even if it costs us, even if it's difficult, even if it makes us having to suffer a little bit, because God knows our ancestors suffered a great deal to give us these freedoms, and we should not easily give them up. Mr. Robert Beavis, thank you once again.
Thank you, sir, Mark, and we look forward to seeing you, and I'll be on the next show you want. Happy to talk at any time.
All right.
And please come and visit. You can carry your gun inside my store anytime you want.
Yeah, it's just getting there is a problem.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's Robert Beavis of Law Weapons, Naperville, Illinois, a true patriot that's doing what we all should do, and that is, regardless of our risk to ourselves, our income, and our bank account, stand up against the government, because our bank account will mean nothing if we're slaves. We'll be right back with a few words about what's going on in this country today and what we can hope to change in the future.
Fighting against the New World Order. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. Well, you know, there's two things that our leftist extremist powers that be constantly try to do. The one is to control us, and the other is to demean us. The one is to take control of everything they can possibly take control of, including your possessions, your mobility, your civil rights, and ultimately your mind and your thought process. And the other thing they seek to do is to teach you to expect less, to expect less out of life, to expect less opportunity, to expect a bleaker future, to expect an uglier, smaller, and more unpleasant life, and to tolerate it. And everything that you do these days is controlled by a government that wants to see you have less, enjoy less, and expect less out of your life, out of your future, and out of your day-to-day existence. One of the things they do is they try to turn you into less of a human being. What made this great experiment in freedom that we call the United States successful? It was from the onset, this concept that greatness could come from individual effort, that if each of us was left alone, if the government would leave us the hell alone so that we could maximize our own potential through our own hard work, through our own diligence, that we would drag civilization reluctantly kicking and screaming behind us, pulling it forward through the efforts of people that have a vision for the future and a willingness to work hard for it. What does that require? That requires people that have self-respect, have dignity, want something better for themselves, for their country, for their children, for their grandchildren. And in order to defeat that, you have to strip people of their humanity. You have to strip them of their goals and desires. You think about the different things that have happened. I'm 67 years old. When I was a Ute, if you wanted to call somebody up, you had to look in a phone book. If you had a phone number you needed to call, like your mom and dad or your school or your doctor, you remembered it in this thing we called a brain, right? You used to have your brain where you stored information. And if you couldn't store your information in your brain, you had a piece of paper and a book. We called them an address book. And you wrote down the name, you wrote down the phone number, and you do it alphabetically. We've got these things called an alphabet. So it's A, B, C. Nobody has a phone book today. Nobody has an address book today. What you have is a cell phone. Cramming one of these cell phones, would you, Patty? So now, you want to call up somebody, you don't look in a phone book. You don't try to use the stuff in here between your ears. You look on your phone book, your phone, until you can find their number, and then you hit a button, and the phone dials itself. You know, when we were kids, until, oh, I don't know, can't do math very well in my head, but I bet it's only 25 years ago or so, maybe 30, phones had buttons. We had to actually push the buttons to dial the number. About 10 years before that, you had to actually use a rotary dial phone to call numbers. Now you hit one button, the phone calls itself. What does this do? It teaches you that instead of using your own mind, your own memory, and knowing how to write and how to read written words, you rely on the nebulous internet to supply you with the information. That we're now taught that we're not supposed to learn things. We're not supposed to hold information in our minds. We're supposed to learn access to information so that nebulous third parties, mostly machines, will tell us what we need to know and tell us what we need to think. Well, you know, every aspect of life now is designed to have you do less as a human being. Think about the concept of self-driving cars. You know, back, oh, I don't know, when I was in high school or so in the 70s, cars started to have cruise control. You could push a button and it would keep the car going at the same speed. But you had to, like, look out the windows and make sure you're not running into something. But now we've got self-driving cars, right? In case you're too stupid, too lazy, or too incompetent to actually drive your own car, the car will drive for you. What does this teach you? It teaches you that you should rely on a machine instead of your own brain to get you around the planet. It teaches you that you should willingly give up your control of the vehicle to the vehicle itself, which is exactly what the deep state wants on every single aspect of life, that you forfeit your self-control to some outside agency. Well, so we've got that. And then let's flip to the other side, and that is degrading our experience, wanting us to expect less, live in a dirty, monochromatic world that does not inspire, but merely is to be endured until your earlier and earlier death. Since our death, you know, our life expectancy is decreasing year by year now. So we should accept a smaller, dirtier, less functional life where we rely on outside sources to tell us what to do and to do it for us. One of my favorite examples is high schools now. Look around when they build high schools. When once again, I always use the scale of my life because I've not been around that long. But back when I was a Ute, high schools looked sometimes like castles or European palaces. They're brick and stone structures with towers and turrets and imposing entranceways. And you looked like you were going someplace significant when you went to high school. And then you go to college and these grand buildings with sweeping lawns and towers and great lawns and gardens. What's a high school look like today? The modern high school built today looks like a prison. It's got gray slab walls with fences around it, sometimes with concertina wires. You walk into a high school, you go through a metal detector. You walk through a high school metal detector, and there are policemen with guns guarding you as you go to school. It starts in grade school now. In grade schools, they have guards doing what? Guarding you against the concept of a mass shooting, right? The risk of mass shooting is greater than zero, but not much greater than zero. The risk of dying in a mass shooting in a grade school is so much less than your risk of dying in an automobile, or if you happen to live in the heart of the most dangerous city in the country like we do in St. Louis, the risk of walking down the street, the risk of going to a Cardinal baseball game, the risk of going downtown for lunch, your risk of facing serious criminal elements in the city of St. Louis on a day-to-day basis is so much larger than your risk of dying as a result of a mass shooting in your grade school. It's ridiculous. But why do they do this? to train you to be afraid, to rely on other people other than yourself for your own protection, and to expect a world where you're controlled, supervised, and limited, and also to expect the ugly. That buildings aren't built to be beautiful, schools aren't built to be inspiring, to make you dream of a better world, to make you dream of yourself someday being able to build even in your imagination a palace or a castle of your own, a world of beauty and a world of achievement. No, you're taught to accept something ugly, gray, and limiting. What has television taught us in the last 20 or 30 years? Think about everything that's portrayed on TV about how wealthy people are supposed to live, like celebrities and athletes and those people that we're supposed to think are moral and ethical superiors. They live in gray and white boxes with square furniture, almost none, with window walls and gray and greige as the only colors. A drab existence, and this is what we're supposed to aspire to. Go to the local department store. Go to the Macy's. Go to the Dillard's. Go to the Nordstrom's. Go to any place you want to buy furniture or clothing. What are the primary colors? They're gray. They're drab. They're green. They're colors which look like the skin of a dead person that's been floating in the river for 3 days. And this is the options that we're now provided with. It's not beauty. It's not something which you wish to wear so you can dress up and look nice in your day-to-day work and environment. It's not like, well, look back. Go to your local historical society. Go to your local library. Pull up newspapers from 40 or 50 years ago. Look at what kids dressed like. They wore shirts and ties. They wore jackets. They wore polished shoes. Then look out your window and see the people with their baggy shorts, with their pants hanging down halfway down to their knees, and their underpants hanging out, and their baggy hoodies, and their tattoos, and their facial hardware, and say, gee, have we advanced? Have we progressed as a civilization? Or are we degrading constantly? So then we've got my favorite current example about how the government wants to do two things, which is control us and limit us, is the push for electric vehicles. And this has been a no-brainer for me from the very first time the government tried to shove electric vehicles down our throats. Why does the government want us to have electric vehicles? Because electric vehicles require electricity, which cannot be easily stored. Gasoline can be easily stored. You can put gasoline in a can. It stays there for years. You can put gasoline in the trunk of your car. You can drive for hundreds of miles. If you have any farm property, for all you farmers out there, you know you've got a big fuel dump where you can operate your equipment for days or years or months. But with an electric car, it gets turned off when the electricity gets turned off. And as we learned during this recent cold snap, your Tesla, when it gets cold, it doesn't run. And when you drive it to the charging station, when it's cold, the charging station won't charge you. And here's my favorite clip of the week, where you see Teslas with all their electric batteries on the back of a tow truck. Guess what? That tow truck runs on gas, and it's towing an electric car, which doesn't run on anything, because when it gets cold, there's no battery power.
Man, this is crazy. It's a disaster. Seriously.
We got a bunch of dead robots out here.
Dead robots. This is your car?
Yeah.
But it was no laughing matter to people like Kevin Sumrak, who landed at O'Hare last night to find his Tesla dead, forcing him to hire a flatbed tow truck to try to find a working charging station.
But I've mentioned this before. The most ominous thing is, and you probably don't recognize this, but it's true. In the spring of 2022, in an infrastructure bill where Congress passed an extra $1.2 trillion worth of debt, allegedly for infrastructure, hidden inside of it, in this 1,100-page bill, was a requirement that all cars manufactured after 2026 have to have a kill switch system in it where the car monitors your behavior. And if the car doesn't think you're behaving appropriately, it turns itself off. That the government has now mandated that every car made in America from 2026 on will be your judge, jury, and executioner. If the car thinks you're weaving or the car thinks you're not behaving appropriately, the car turns itself off. You have now become a slave of the brain of your car. You have substituted your own brain for the car's brain, your liberty for the choice of the car to decide whether or not you're allowed to drive or not. And all this has been passed by a legislature of both Republicans and Democrats, which means there are no Republicans, there are no Democrats. It's just a deep state, and they want to control every aspect of everything. And boys and girls, it's already imposed upon us. We each have to stand up and fight it now, or it'll be too late. Our freedoms are on the virtual edge of destruction. This was our last opportunity to save this nation, to save our republic, and stand up for individual liberties. If we don't do it now, it'll be gone forever.
Fighting against totalitarianism. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.